Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
Eric, I'm going to turn this over to you. Let us know a little bit about who you are, how you got into this industry. And for those of you that don't know Eric, where do we find you?
Hi, Mandy.
Hi.
Thanks for having me here. This is just a really wonderful honor.
Yeah.
On your show. So yeah, wow. Where to start? So, right. My name is Eric Herlock. I work for Lancaster Farming Newspaper, which is an agricultural newspaper in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. We cover the Mid-Atlantic region, you know, all aspects of agriculture, dairy, beef, all sorts of things. And our main range is from like New England down to, let's say, Virginia, West Virginia, that area. But we're focused, you know, we're based in Pennsylvania. And so that's where I am right now. I'm about an hour outside of Philadelphia. And let's see, I'm the digital editor at Lancaster Farming Newspaper.
Okay.
And I've been there over 7 years. You know, I was doing the websites and publishing the content and doing all that stuff. And, you know, we're always looking for new ways to reach audience. And so about 4 years ago, I was like, hey, can I do a podcast about industrial hemp? And because hemp hadn't been, you know, legalized by the Farm Bill yet. This was the summer of 2018. So it was still like, you know, lurking out there, like, was hemp going to be legal in the 2018 Farm Bill? And so I was given the green light, and it was sort of a side project, you know, with my regular job. And I just started talking to people. My first interview was with Jeff Whaling from the National Hemp Association. And he sat down with me and talked to me for like 3 hours. And it was like this amazing download of information. And I was excited about hemp, you know, before that, because Now, I read the Jack Harrer book. I think I came across that back in like the early 90s, maybe 94. I read that. So that was all sort of in the back of my mind, like, oh, we can make everything out of plants. We can make everything out of hemp. And, you know, I'm a Generation Xer, and we've been hearing about climate change, you know, since the early 80s anyway. Yeah. And it's just been so frustrating to me that we're not really anywhere further in mitigating it. So my path here is sort of inspired by my desire to be part of the climate change solution.
Okay.
All right. So I threw out a lot of different things there. Let me see if
okay, so I have a question for you really quick.
Yeah, please.
Talk to me really quick about who your audience was and what type of content you were really writing or putting out prior to diving into hemp.
Okay. Right. So as the digital editor, I didn't actually do too much writing. Back then, I would be sent out on, you know, stories here and there, but my sort of, I love progressive agriculture. I love sustainable agriculture, regenerative ag. And so I would write stories when I could about people doing, you know, local organic sort of stuff. I live relatively close to the Rodale Institute in Pennsylvania, so I had been up there for a few field days.
Okay.
In fact, I was there writing a story about like insectary strips for pest control in the summer of 2017 when I saw their hemp test plot.
Okay.
You know, they had 4 acres of hemp there. And I ended up interviewing the farm manager that day, just shot a little video, and standing next to that field of hemp, you know, it was like late July, and the hemp was tall and lush and green. And it was like, I felt like I received a vision, right? Like, oh, this is it. We're doing it. Like it's happening. Finally, we're going to do this. And so that's sort of been my, you know, I have this vision of us making everything out of plants, right? Like we don't have to be so reliant on
extraction.
Right, right. So that's what, you know, sort of fuels my passion for hemp.
Yeah.
But like, I love agriculture. I love, like, I think the job of the farmer is the most important job here. You know what I mean? Like it feeds us, it, you know, it clothes us, all of that. And then so to see that we could add hemp into that, it's just, I don't know, it, I'm very proud that like we're close to this, you know, like, so, you know, so I dove in, let's get back to starting the podcast. So that summer of 2018, after talking to Jeff Whaling, I just started talking to other people and started publishing these things into a podcast. And I have sort of a background in audio, I guess, engineering. You know, I'm a musician, and I've been making home recordings, you know, since the 80s, I guess.
So cool.
I had this like skill set, right, where I knew how to put together an audio piece of audio. So that was great. And I just started talking to people and would publish. And like I said, it was a sort of a part-time, you know, like a side hustle at work. But we got response, you know, people were sort of hungry for the information I was putting out, because back in 2018, there really wasn't a lot of, you know, like farmer focused information, you know, like how to plant, row spacing, that sort of thing. So I just was trying to talk to as many farmers as I could back then, people who were in the pilot programs, but also I was talking to, you know, like people at associations like Jeff Whaling, Erica Stark. We have a great hemp historian in Pennsylvania named Les Stark. He's actually married to Erica Stark, and he has a book. I don't know if you can see that. Oh, it's blurry.
Awesome.
It's called Hempstone Heritage. So there's just like this rich, I don't know, I sort of stumbled into this rich tapestry of really knowledgeable people that I just, you know, started talking to and recording the conversations and then publishing them. Yeah. And so, and that sort of has taken over my job at this point. It's still not my full-time job, but it's like my main thing at work. I still have other digital editor duties, and I still write stories for the paper. But yeah, I'm sorry, what was your question?
Okay, so I'm going to go on, because you brought up a couple of things that are really fascinating to me. Not being in the hemp industry and now latching on to the industry really with this focus around carbon sequestration and, you know, reducing greenhouse gases and climate change and things like that. Through your interview process, can you kind of speak to what interviews or what technology, you know, what were the aha moments that came up that you're like, well, hemp is at the forefront of climate change and at the forefront of carbon sequestration?
Well, it should be at the forefront of those things. Okay. I'm not convinced it's quite there yet, because it still seems like we're sort of talking in the bubble and we need to get out of the bubble.
Yes.
But one of my early interviews was with a material scientist at the Ford Motor Company.
Yes. And
she was like, yeah, we would love to have a giant supply of hemp so we could make stuff out of it, but we don't have that and we can't. You know, this was October of 2018, so Farm Bill hadn't been signed into law yet. So there was essentially no, you know, industrial hemp supply. And so that was just like, that was eye-opening to me, like, oh, okay, the car companies are on to this. They know it, but they know the limitations of the supply chain. So that was fascinating. Around the same time, I met Bruce Dietzen. You know, he made the body of his Renew sports car out of hemp.
Yep.
And he has just been continually fascinating to me. You know, I see him at some of the conventions, and I've interviewed him a bunch of times, you know, about his XPRIZE entry and Drawdown Hemp. And it's people like Bruce that, like, they're so inspiring, because they share my vision, you know, like we have to get off of the fossil fuels. We can make everything out of plants, but we're just not there yet, but we don't have a lot of time. So it's frustrating. So those were a few of my early interviews. Some of the, like, and I have fun with these interviews too. Like I sort of like follow my own curiosity, and, you know, I ended up talking to a guy in Vermont who makes ukuleles out of hemp, you know, and that's right up my alley, because, you know, I'm a musician and I would love to play a hemp ukulele. But over the years, I've talked to hundreds of people now. Like, you and I are kind of in that same boat.
Yeah.
You know, we talk to people and we make connections, and it's just been an honor to be in this space. Like, I'm not a farmer. I'm not a processor. I am not an investor. It's like I have zero skin in the game, essentially, right? Like, I'm just in this because I want to see the industry succeed. I want to see, you know, the
farmers. our farmers succeed, and I want to see manufacturing because something more sustainable and more ethical and
local.
Yes.
Local manufacturing, right? And hemp is perfect for that. You know, we could have, you know, hundreds, thousands of smaller manufacturing sites, you know, near the farm fields, and communities will be, you know, brought back to life. Because, you know, I've driven around America, I've seen just, you know, things have been decimated by, I don't know if it was NAFTA or just decisions by politicians years ago, but it's like, come on, we can do better than this. We can improve the quality of life for all Americans. And just, you know, we're so reliant on global supply chains. And you saw during the pandemic that just like, no, that's not a good way to be. Like, we need to be locally resilient. And so that's what I love about hemp, because it offers that.
Okay, so talk to me about some of the innovation that you've seen, some of the most exciting, maybe things that are two pieces, right? I see this as I interview people and I get to talk about things that are very forward thinking and years out versus things that are happening right now that are, you know, people may not be aware of. Can you give some examples of things that you've seen and heard?
Well, right. I mean, I've heard about, you know, like batteries and nanotechnology with hemp, and that stuff's fascinating. I haven't really talked to anyone in that space, but I hope there's people out there working on that.
Connect you. I've got someone doing this. So.
All right. That stuff is amazing. But just like at a very like basic level, hempcrete houses. It's, you know, it's such an amazing yet simple process. You know, we could be growing our houses in the fields. And again, that would be such a boon for agriculture. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, our farmers have been, you know, getting the short end of the stick for years, generations at this point. And it's like, I also look at hemp as this way to sort of like put the means back in the hands of the farmers, right? So they're not always just chasing commodity prices. I don't know. So hempcrete, hemp houses, I've been in a few hemp structures, and just the, you know, like the difference as soon as you walk into one of these places, you can feel it with all of your senses. Like, oh, this is, you know, not some particle board palace, you know, coated in plastic. This is a, you know, livable, breathable place. So I love the hempcrete. And then, you know, the stuff that the folks at Hempitecture are doing with the insulation, you know, and it's just like, that's really what we have to do is, you know, not make everything out of hemp at first, but get a little bit of hemp in stuff and just get people comfortable with using it. And that's how you grow the market. You know, if you have a product that you could use a little bit of hemp in, you know, whether it's plastic or whatever, you start building the markets and then you grow how much hemp you're putting in. And I don't know, it's a slow process. You know, it's going to take a long time, but hopefully not as long as some people think. I feel like we've gotten further in a shorter amount of time than I expected. Like, here it is 4 years after I published my first podcast, and, you know, things are happening. Like, it's great to see the processing centers coming up, you know, the folks in Montana, and I don't know.
There's a number of them that are, you know, opening up and have technology or equipment being delivered in the next few months that it's pretty exciting. And so, yeah, I'm stoked. So speaking of supply chain, right, there's a lot of discussion when we go back to farm and, you know, what does the scale look like? And especially where we're really competing with commodities across, you know, record high prices for some of these. Okay. You and I spoke a little bit about two campaigns that are out right now, the hemp exemption and the value of the seed. Can you talk a little bit about what are those and what do those look like potentially for the industry? Do you know?
Yeah, I'll try my best. Again, not an expert, just did, you know, have interviews with the people who are doing these. But yeah, a couple of months ago, I spoke to Erica Stark, Courtney Moran, and Morgan Elliott Tweet. And so they are putting together this hemp exemption, which would basically exempt fiber and grain growers from having to go through all of the stringent THC testing and all of that. Like, these are like limits that keep farmers from sort of getting in. They're like, wait a minute, I have to pay a fee to grow this. And then I have to have the government show up on my farm a couple of times to test my material. Like, these are things that are like, you know, deal breakers, I think, in the minds of a lot of farmers.
Well, when the risk of it going hot is a risk of your profitability,
right,
or any revenue, that puts the risk back where it should
be. On the farmer. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So the exemption would eliminate that. You know, you would register, say, I'm growing fiber and grain, and, you know, this THC content is irrelevant at that point. So that's the one. And then I just spoke to Wendy Mosher last week.
Yep.
I'll be publishing that conversation this week.
Awesome.
And her initiative, it's not just hers, but she's working with a few other stakeholders, International Hemp, a few other things, but it's more about certified seed, you know, and if growers, I guess, commit to growing certified seed, then a lot of those hurdles would be diminished. You know, I don't know the full details of it. I'm still learning, but yeah. So those are neat things that I think will, both of them have huge potential to grow the industry, to help the industry and get more acres planted, because really that's what we need.
Right. You know? Right. Well, and I think that's where, you know, where my goal is, or where I see the biggest opportunity, right, is our focus needs to be not just on the THC content or the THC level, but on, you know, the volume or the quality of fiber and herd that's being produced, or grain that's being produced, you know, especially when we're looking at certified seeds. And so it's interesting to see where the industry is, especially in soybean and corn, and where hemp is, you know, and what hurdles it's going to take for us to match that up. And I just think that, yeah, we're years away from, I mean, how long did it take, maybe you know better, for soybean and corn to become mainstream crops?
Right. Well, actually, that was an eye-opening conversation I had last summer. I was in Kentucky talking to Dr. Tony Brannon. He's at Murray State.
Yeah.
And he was telling me, like, when he was a kid growing up on his grandparents' farm, that they grew soybeans, but they grew it as a forage crop.
Yeah.
They didn't. You know, they didn't harvest the grain or whatever. And then look at it now. It's the second biggest crop in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's all over the place. So
I think it was like 40 years before it was a mainstream crop more.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? I guess he was talking about this was in the early 60s. So over 50 years. So yeah. So it's encouraging to know that, you can have a new commodity crop. So that's good. And that farmers will adopt it eventually if it makes sense. But then I think about all of the money that's flying around in the world right now. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't have any of it, but you know, like I keep in mind, I'm sort of a simpleton. I'm a visionary, you know, like I'm just like, why couldn't Jeff Bezos just with like policy decision, just completely just change everything? He could say like, by 2025, I want to have all of our Amazon boxes be made out of, you know, non-tree plant material or hemp, and then, you know, game on, right? We could just, they use a lot of boxes.
Yes.
Or I want to see, you know, like Bill Gates or somebody being like, all right, just grow as much hemp as you can and we'll stockpile it, right?
Because let's get Tesla and both Elon and his brother on the regenerative agriculture side to commit to using it, you know, for car parts or for packaging.
Right. Yep. Yeah. 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 I mean, some of the stuff in packaging, like that mycelium packaging that is a replacement for styrofoam. Yeah. There's so many just like cool things happening because there's smart people out there who are passionate and dedicated, and they're pushing the new paradigm. And that's what I'm here for. I'm here for the new paradigm, right? I'm sick of the old paradigm.
Yes.
We can do better than this. You know, we can take care of each other. We can take care of the planet, you know, our natural resources. So, and I think hemp just sort of like fits right into that. It's a new paradigm crop.
Because the whole mycelium thing is another thing that's just like mind blown. Like where has that been also? Why have we been burying that as an opportunity?
Well, the reason we're burying everything is because the people who are making the money don't want to share that, right? Like the whole reason that the state of the world is as it is greed and apathy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Some people are just like, they want everything for themselves. And then other people are just distracted. You know, like I talk about this on our podcast, like how do we reach the non-hemp people? How do we get, you know, consumers to demand that their, you know, their shoes or their, you know, beach chairs or whatever are made out of plants and they don't have a, you know, a giant carbon footprint, or maybe they're carbon negative, you know, like, so I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for somebody. But
what is it that you think consumers are wanting? You know, is it carbon neutral? Is it carbon sequestration? I mean, that's what really drives your, you know, your impact,
well,
your desire. But
I think consumers just want to be, you know, well fed and, you know, I don't know, like, I don't, yeah, they're a little distracted by things, but, you know, there might be things happening in the world that would change their mind, you know, like a wake up call. Like the pandemic was sort of that. And maybe the very atrocious war in Ukraine is that. Yeah. And I don't know, on one level, like I'm really sad that the world is in the state that it's in. But on the other hand, I'm like an eternal optimist. I'm like, I know we can fix this, right? Like, yeah, so.
I don't know how we can't, because the brilliant minds that are working in the hemp industry is part of my it fuels my fire. The people and the innovation are absolutely, it's fascinating. They're brilliant. So let me ask you this, what's the industry need to do collectively to really secure an agreement with an Amazon or a, you know, what do we need as a whole?
Yeah, it's a great question. I wish I had the answer there. There was one suggestion I heard.
Magic ball, get it out.
Right, yeah, eight ball out. But out at NOCO, I sat in a bunch of really interesting conversations and someone was talking about, you know, if you could get a purchase agreement from a giant company who, and they would say like, yeah, by 2025, we're going to, you know, require this much hemp, and that would, you know, create a market, and then the growers could get, you know, financing, and we could just jumpstart it. And it would be a PR win for any company that did that. You know, it's like, oh, look, we're going to be 50% plant-based in 6 years or whatever, you know? And then it would be up to the industry to meet those agreements, which, and I think we can do, you know, we've got, you know, just looking at the United States, like we've got the best farmers in the world. We've got some of the best farmland and, you know, we can do this.
Okay. So I have a question. This is a topic that comes up often and I hear pretty varying opinions or differences in opinions on scalability of the market, right? And what is most effective? And a lot of times the discussion is we have a huge opportunity to fit, you know, and help rural communities by building rural processing and local manufacturing, right? And then there's also this piece, you know, where go big and people that get a hold of this that have capital and see opportunity have an ability to build much larger facilities, truck from longer distances, you know, own more acres. Can you kind of speak to your opinion on what's best, what you think is best for our industry as far as being able to scale and be sustainable?
Well, we've seen like the go big model, you know, like I grew up in, you know, these times of advanced capitalism, and I'm not a big fan of going super big. And I think probably the answer is a combination of the two. But I really would like to see smaller regional processing, smaller supply chains. Because as soon as you start trucking hemp, you know, hundreds of miles, you lose all of the sort of carbon benefits of it. Because now you're putting energy in other places and it sort of kills the whole thing. So I think we need to have many small localized processors feeding into smaller regional industries.
I agree with you. I think it's more like and I'm not from agriculture, and so you probably can speak to this, but I envision like a co-op model or grain silo model, right? Where, you know, as they may feed larger processors or large manufacturers, there still has to be a place where that initial processing's got to take place close to farm.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, we've got the space, you know, we could do this. There's so many, like just here in Pennsylvania, there's so many like just little towns that you drive through them and you're like, wow, this place used to be an industrial, you know, capital back in the day. Like actually I live near Pottstown and it's, you know, they used to have this like thriving steel industry, like the steel for the Golden Gate Bridge was made here. And it's like the town doesn't have that anymore. It's like, it's all dried up. And so towns like are like that all over the place. And if there was a giant injection of capital all over the place, we could do this.
Okay. So that was going to be my next question is painting a picture, right? Again, looking from bird's eye view, being in it. Cause I feel like sometimes I say things and people are like, yeah, you're not in it. You have no idea. So I understand this and I want to be clear, this is perspective, but if we could paint a perfect picture, what is needed? Like, is it capital, a big capital injection to the industry? Is it a celebrity to come on? Is it a big contract? Like, you know, there's all these strategies that we talk about as an industry. Or like, what do we need collectively? What can we do to put some clout behind him?
Yeah, I think big contracts would certainly help.
Yes.
Celebrities, you know, I'm not super enamored by celebrity culture. And things are so like politically divisive at this point that if you get the wrong celebrity, then you're done, you know? But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm sort of a dreamer, simpleton, visionary, whatever, but I'm like, come on, there's billionaires. There's more billionaires now than ever. Why don't you just, you know, and I love spending other people's money, right? So just come on, people, get on board, you know? You know, I talk to Ken Elliott from IND Hemp sort of regularly. He is one of the sponsors of our show, but he's actually sort of become, you know, a friend over the past couple of years, getting to know him. And he talks about the hill to die on. It's like, come on, people, you have to make a stand here. Like, he's in it for the environment, for, you know, maintaining the, you know, God's green earth for our grandchildren, for our great grandchildren, for, you know, generations from now. Because it did not take long to screw this place up, you know, 150 years, 200 years. But look at all of the advancements we've had in that time, you know, like, as far as human existence goes, we're pretty comfortable these days, right? Like a lot of us have, you know, we're taken care of. Our basic needs are met more than maybe back in the old days. Like I'm not going to be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger, right? I'm going to be, I don't know.
And most of us are not hunting and killing our own meat.
Right.
I mean,
some people still are, sure.
But most of us are not.
Right. So like that whole idea of the hill to die on. And, you know, that this is Ken's idea. Like I see what he's talking about, but come on, we need to actually make a stand. People have to sort of get off their, out of their chairs and, you know, start doing something. And I think there's a ton of people doing good work now, but we need to hit that sort of critical mass, right? We need more people involved. We need more people to just share the vision that, oh, it is possible to make things out of plants, to like sequester carbon in the soil, to pull it out of the atmosphere, to put it into our products. And it's simple. Like, why can't we just go with the simple solution? And again, like you can accuse me of being really naive, which sure I am. And there's all these other things out in the world that I don't understand, you know, the mechanics of economics and things. And I don't know if it needs to be that complicated. Right. Like we have one planet and we should focus all of our attention to making sure we have it.
Right. Okay. So I've got a question, right? Let's go to the farm side of this. You've been in this farm perspective for a long time. Talk to me about some of the reservations as to why farmers aren't jumping on board.
Well, right? First, I think it's marijuana. A lot of farmers are just like, nope, because, you know, that propaganda has been foisted on everybody for generations. So there's that stigma. People are up against that. But then there's the, you know, wait, I have to buy a license to grow this. And then I have to have the government show up at my farm. So those things. And that there's no, well, I don't want to say no market, but there's not an easy market. You can't just drive to the elevator and sell it, right? So, and plus, like, there's other costs, like the seeds are really expensive, or they're coming down in price. But yeah, so there's just a lot of barriers to entry. The CBD boom and eventual bust was helpful in some ways, but also sort of counterproductive in other ways.
I agree.
Because here in Pennsylvania, you know, we had hundreds of growers in that first year who were hearing these stories like, I'm going to make $50,000 or more per acre from my hemp. And, you know, that didn't really work out for everybody. I know some people made some money.
And then when I talk to people and say, well, I know that of farmers that are paying $900 or $1,000 or $1,200 per acre, they're like, wait, what? Even though that's very competitive for the crop. And so it's interesting to me, the damage or the backpedaling that you almost have to do, like you said. And so I think that it's a double-edged sword when we look at, like, even if we have the contract, there is still a lot of reservation, a lot of gray area for farmers, as well as our knowledge of, you know, genetics and what's going to grow where and being able to meet that demand. And
right. Yeah. I mean, things like, you know, here in Pennsylvania, we have Kreider Farms. They released Chickies Creek hemp eggs. It's a hemp fed egg.
Yeah.
And they had to get, you know, they had to jump through a lot of hoops and pay a lot of money in order to do that. They can only sell the hemp eggs in Pennsylvania. But things like that, like hemp seed becoming a livestock feed, that's going to blow the thing wide open. And then farmers will have another source of protein for their animals. They'll have more markets to sell hemp into. But again, it's just like the whole marijuana propaganda is still like creating fear in people. Like, oh no, we can't feed the chickens the seeds because they're going to get high.
Yeah.
And there's no THC in the seeds. And people have been feeding hemp seeds to birds for millennia, probably.
You know? Well, and that's what I'm so confused about, is like grain is considered grass, right? Generally regarded as safe.
Oh, right.
Right. And so I'm confused about like where the reservation is at opening that market so much.
Well, there are a couple of organizations. Is it the AAFCO? I'm not sure. Acronyms.
AFCO.
And they need to be, you know, they need to feel like they're involved, right? Because they're a stakeholder and that's what they do. They're the sort of the gatekeeper. They need to justify the existence of their institution, really. So they're slowing everything down and they need everything tested, you know, per species, per subspecies. And they need to know that it's very safe for the animals, which I get on one hand. But on the other hand, like you said, like it's generally regarded as safe from the FDA. You can feed it to your baby, but you can't feed it to, you know, your Angus or whatever.
Well, hey, I meant to tell you, and I wish I remembered the name and I'm embarrassed that I don't right now, but there's baby formula out on the market now made out of hemp. And with this shortage of sunflowers from the war, that was a pretty impressive. John Rulak actually talked about that. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's like hemp is so versatile. Like what can it do, right?
Makes it pretty dang exciting. Well, is there anything else you want to highlight? You know, what are some things maybe that people should be paying attention to that maybe we're not, or that, let me back up, because I want to gear this towards our farm and agriculture with farmers at the forefront of the conversation. You know, because there's a lot of business talk that we're going to do and do and do and do, but there isn't a lot of, I shouldn't say there isn't a lot. I want to make sure that the conversation still includes taking care of that farmer, right?
Take care of the farmers. Without the farmers, there's no industry. And I personally am going to be super pissed off if this whole thing develops and the farmers are still getting shafted.
Exactly.
Going back to the new paradigm, like we have to take care of the people who grow, who do this stuff, right? And and hopefully hemp can bring more people into agriculture, because right now it's like 1-2% of the population are in agriculture, where, you know, you look at 100 years ago and it was like everybody was in agriculture because everybody has a vested interest in where their food comes from. So if hemp can bring more people in, if farmers can get paid without, you know, just without being stuck in that cycle of debt, whatever, and if hemp can get farmers moving away from glyphosate and to things like that, that, you know, like I think organic agriculture is, you know, for most of human existence, it was just agriculture. And I know we've had a lot of advancements in the past 100 years or so, but I think there's a lot of research out there that says, yeah, like those chemicals are killing our soil. And if we want healthy food, then we need healthy soil. And so hemp has the potential to help with that. Did that answer your question? I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I'm curious, you know, what are some of those things we need to really be paying attention to considering those farmers as we're building this, right? Like you said, the pesticides, I look at water, you know, hemp is a great tool to support water areas that are in drought, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, what are some other things from a farm perspective, you know, as businesses are building that, a lot of these hemp companies are not farmers.
Right.
And so what should they be paying attention to? What should I be focusing on as somebody that's representing a farming organization?
I think just like your values need to be in order. You know, it's like, is profit your main driver? Then get out of here, because that model isn't working for us. You know, like short-term profits, chasing short-term profits has decimated the planet.
Yes.
So yeah, check your priorities and realize that, you know, you have to consider, sure, you need to make a living, but do you need to gather up everything? No, we need to take care of each other. We need to take care of the environment. So that would be the first thing. But also those initiatives we talked about, the value of the seed and the hemp exemption, that's going to do, you know, major things to remove those barriers at the farm level, right? Just to get more people in. And also, you know, once once hemp becomes a legal livestock feed, you're going to see a lot more people growing hemp for grain. You know, they already have the equipment they need. They know how to do it. It's just going to be another crop in the rotation.
Yes.
It's going to be beneficial. You know, there's a lot of research going into, like, your yields are going to be better in wheat or corn or whatever it is, if it goes in after hemp. You know, because hemp is a different type of plant. It's got, you know, deep roots and it feeds the soil. So there's just a lot of exciting things that I think, you know, are going to benefit the farmer.
Can you talk to me about some research you just mentioned? Like, something that's really exciting for me is getting those numbers on, you know, increased yields after hemp has been planted. What's some other exciting research that you know of that's going down?
That's a great question. I'm fascinated by, like, the medicinal stuff, right? Like, wait, cannabis can cure cancer. Like, that's some of the research. Like, it has all of these medicinal things that are going to be super helpful. I honestly don't follow the research too much. Like, I'm a writer, musician, not so much a science guy, right? So, but
you know, you do a ton of interviews and there's so many interesting projects that are definitely in the R&D phase, right?
Right. I mean, I love to see all of the different, like the tests, the regional tests, where they're growing the same crops, you know, in 10 different states to see what works. Yeah, right. You're involved in one of them, right? Yeah.
I'm super excited about that. I'm really excited, again, about being able to, like, see it firsthand in the fields and obvious differences and obvious consistencies on crops that are successful and not successful based on, you know, some variables. And so it's been really good.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, South Bend Industrial Hemp
in
Kansas in the intro. And I was there last year for their field day. We were on our tour. We were in this great big RV and we rolled in just as it was, you know, underway. And the Baldwins were just very welcoming and just, you know, you could tell they're just good people and farm is amazing. And yeah, we went out into the fields and saw the hemp. And I'm from Pennsylvania, so we don't have those irrigation pivot things, you know, so that was just like an amazing thing to see how agriculture works in different regions.
Yeah.
You know, so that was great. You know, you fly over sometimes and you see the circles, but like to be in one of them and to see that it's industrial hemp. Yeah, I'm just super inspired what Melissa and Aaron and Mitch are doing there.
Yeah.
And I love that they installed one of those decorticators, and they're doing exactly what I want to see happen everywhere else. You know,
me too.
They've got the processing capacity. They're bringing in other farmers. They're creating markets. They're creating value, and I love it. I love to see that. I know that one of your other
the community they've built is pretty impressive.
Right.
It's very, very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I used to say on the podcast is cannabis loves community.
Yeah.
But I forgot. I guess I forgot about that tagline. But it's true. Like everywhere you go, there's a community around this. But also one of your other sponsors, Prairie Band Ag, they just got one of the Formation Ag, what is it, the FiberTrack 660. And so that's great. Like, so I love this. It just like, you know, makes me beam with joy that it's happening, right? And that's one of the things I love about my job is that I get to just document this, you know, like you never see an industry, you know, grow up out of nothing. And, you know, how lucky am I to be in this spot at the right time that I got to witness it, right? And to document it and to help people, you know, like to share information and bring people together. I'm just like super grateful that I've had this opportunity. It's just, it sort of like makes the rest of my life make more sense. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
It's exciting. It's fun. And the amount of knowledge we've learned, right? There is not a book anywhere that could give you the amount of knowledge that you've been able to acquire sitting in the role that you're in, which I think is very exciting.
You should write a book, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yes.
I'm toying around with that idea.
Okay.
Because I think the tour we went on last year would be a really interesting framework for a book.
Agreed.
And yeah, I'm still recovering from that trip. That was that was a lot. But we met so many great people. You know, we were on the road for 6 weeks. We put 10,000 miles on this RV. And yeah, like if the first question I would ask me about this is like, how does driving that many miles in an RV do anything to help climate change? And yeah, it doesn't. And so like there's guilt there. But the people, go ahead.
What? I love that you walk the talk, that you are concerned about that as we build this. And I think that's one thing that, you know, I see more and more as commonality is that like we are in this for the good of the whole, not just individuals. And it's pretty impactful. So cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Well, I really appreciate your time today. I know that if there are quite a few questions that came in, I saw one that came in that says you're a celebrity or here's our celebrity. I'll have to get on and look at who the link is. Also that cannabis can impact us now and good advice to stop talking about the next or future generation, but being that this causes the comfortable distraction, because I think that this is, you know, we have an impact now. Immediately by growing and building homes, we're impacting our carbon footprint.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'm not excluding the now when I say we need to, you know, have the planet in livable condition for future generations. But yeah, now is the only moment we have, right?
Well, and I think that's what's so exciting, right? Is it is in the now. And I think what I'm excited for, Eric, and I'd be interested in collaborating on bringing guests in that talk about some of these is putting these pieces together for calculating and really getting the data behind the claims for those full life cycles, right? That by building X number of homes, this is the exact impact that we have. And this is how our farmers are impacted by it.
Yeah. There's people out there doing that, right? Exactly. Like Bruce Beetson, he's doing that at Drawdown Hemp. Ben Dobson at Hudson Carbon is doing that same thing. You know, like that's the other thing for farmers is that they're going to get paid for their carbon, right? So, yeah, I'm very thankful that there's people out there doing that because, yeah, we need to quantify it.
Yes.
We can't just sit around saying, oh, it's going to save the world, but we need, you know, the numbers to say like, no, this is how it's going to work.
Yep. Yep. And putting the campaign behind that. Mm-hmm. So I would love as we gather those to collaborate on sharing that message, right? Because I think that's where it really becomes, you know, the punch in the gut and it becomes, you know, where the house pulls on our heartstrings or the things that are a little bit more distant become a little bit more close to us. And so, yeah, I'd love to support you. What can I do to support you and how do people get in touch with you if they have questions or comments or want to get involved with what you're doing?
Sure. You can get in touch with me a number of different ways. First is at lancasterfarming.com. You can go there and listen to our podcast, and I recommend you doing that. We've got, I think, over 200 episodes there for you. They're also available on the normal podcasting platforms, you know, Apple, Spotify, Audible. There's a bunch of them that we're on. So you can listen there, and you can always send an email to me. You can send it to podcast@lancasterfarming.com, or if you, it goes to the same place, but it's eherlock@lancasterfarming.com. Email me. I love to hear from people. I am always looking for, you know, ideas to explore and people to talk to and innovations, you know, right? So I want to learn more, and I want to share what I learn with other folks. And then also like Instagram and like those sorts of things. But LancasterFarming.com is the best way to go.
Perfect. Okay. Well, I would love to collaborate. If you have anybody great that you're also working with, I would love to bring them on the show and give them a platform, talk to them.
Okay.
You know, my passion is very much connecting. So however we can help support you, please let us know. You know, we're absolutely, I'm all about the collaboration. I was going to say we're teamed up, but about collaboration. Other than that, anything else you want to say before we sign off?
Well, I should put a plug in for Lancaster Farming newspaper.
Yeah.
See this?
Yes.
It's an actual newspaper. You know, it's like, it's a thick, fat newspaper. It comes out once a week. It's got, you know, agricultural news. It's got things you can, you know, use on the farm. It's got recipes and a family section. It's like something for everybody. But then it's full of like classified ads. It's like, so the farmers here in Pennsylvania and around the area, you know, they love it. You know, it's a really an amazing tool for farmers. So if you're out there and you don't know about Lancaster Farming newspaper, get a subscription, because it's worth the $60 a year or whatever it is. So
that's crazy. See, that's awesome. I love newspaper, and I actually see, just like this shift, this paradigm shift, the value back to radio and newspaper, like the traditional means of communicating. And
yeah, I love the magic of radio. I'm a big fan of audio stuff. My issue with newspapers is that we need to be printing it on hemp paper.
Yes.
So I've had conversations with the president, CEO of our parent company, and it's like, if we could grow the hemp in Lancaster County and then pulp it and make it into paper, we're years away from that. But it's like, if we don't dream big, if we don't have the picture in our mind of what the world should look like, you know, then we're not going to get there. So
yeah,
here's to the dreamers.
Okay. Well, shout out to those. Tom with Cottrell Paper was on our call just yesterday talking about what he's doing, and it's 100% paper. Hemp paper. So that's pretty exciting. And I know that there have been some good opportunities open up around the paper industry with some of the local companies. And so fingers crossed that we do start to see hemp printed, especially in newspaper, because I know that there is hemp paper being printed, but I would love to see it really, like you said, at the scale, game changing. So anyways, okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. There have been lots of great people on. Cody jinxed you right at the exact same time. Let's get hemp paper printed. Other than that, you guys, thank you very, very much. Eric, thank you again for joining me. I really, really appreciate you. Thank you very much for joining, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mandy. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.